There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
You have found the Shanny Pants Show. Hello, it's Shanny, the least influential influencer that there ever was. With a heart full of laughter and a journey that runs deeper than the trendiest makeup You may know me from my ridiculously comedic fashion and makeup tutorials on social media, but guess what? There's so much more to the story. I was born, raised, and married in a cult. When I left the cult at 31 years old, I had no knowledge about real life or how to process what I had been through. I felt very alone. The past couple of years, I've been on an incredible journey of learning, growing, and recovering, and I'm excited to share this with you. I'll bring you stories from the Cultiverse, where many cult survivors and experts share their knowledge and experiences. Their stories are more than inspiring. They're a roadmap to self-discovery and resilience. So get ready for a podcast that's part comedy, part wisdom, and a whole lot of heart. If you feel alone in your journey, my hope is that that will change once you hear these stories. Welcome to the Shanny Pants Show. I am here today with Mike Boyd, and I am so excited that you are here on the Shanny Pants Show. I'm very excited to hear more about your story. Why don't you give just kind of a brief introduction of who you are, and then I'll start asking you, of course, all the questions I have, because I have a lot of curiosity with this interview. So give us a brief introduction, Mike.
Sure. So I was born and raised in the Sacramento area, and when I was young, I was a latchkey kid, and I pretty much did what I wanted, went where I wanted, and lived the way I wanted. And then when I was 17 years old, I had an abrupt experience in life where I was separated from my family, from my friends, from my day-to-day environment, and ended up doing time as a young man when I was 17 years old. And at that point is where I became a Christian. But when I left my point of incarceration, then I still kind of lived the same way I did day to day. And, you know, I really didn't have any guidance, didn't have any vision for my life. But ultimately, I started attending Warehouse Ministries in the greater Sacramento area. And I started to attend a 12-step program, which is similar to AA and NA. And, you know, I learned a lot, and I felt very, very comfortable in that environment. And then, you know, I had prior to becoming a part of that church, I had worked with a gentleman for a few years, and he introduced me to a different church that I had become somewhat interested in. And I think the thing that was attractive to me is it had a lot of boundaries that were set and that, you know, were part of the culture. And it was attractive to me because for myself as a young man, you know, growing up in Northern California, I had no boundaries. Well, I had a lack of boundaries.
Yeah.
So I think that's what drew me to it. And the second thing, which, you know, I went round and round on my head on this and kind of thought maybe I'm just a little bit crazy, but I felt like I was led by God there.
Mm.
And why would God lead somebody to a church function that you ultimately came to believe and find out that it was a cult? And the reason for me is I believe maybe there are some unique things that he wanted me to learn and to share with other people someday. And, as a result, though, I had a lot of life's issues that spawned out of that. It amplified destructive behavior within my soul while I was in and a part of the cult. It amplified things like a struggle with love, value, and acceptance from others and from God. It just Pharisaical church cultures exasperate that in people because your spiritual temperature can never rise to a level that's acceptable in the eyes of others, in the eyes of the minister, so to speak, if you're trying to get some type of value or acceptance from them. And it just, it never works. It never fulfills. And that thing that is constant from God is love, value, and acceptance. And I ultimately learned that. But it took some time, and it took a long, long hot fire in my life to grasp that. And it was painful. But ultimately, when I was about 44 years of age, and I was probably about 24 years into the cult, is when I believe God started to download into me the dysfunction of our church function. And I call it cult church. That's what it was to me. And little by little, I started to grasp that and the unique dynamics that paralleled us to a cult. So over that 2-year period of time, I started to download that information to my wife, who was raised from within that cult from birth. And for her to capture it and to see it and grasp it in her mind was a miracle. And then for my kids, we raised our 3 kids there. When we started to download into them our dysfunction, our improper understanding or thinking, how we viewed and treated other people within our own cultic function and how we saw people on the outside. When we started to download that into them, and they were well into their teenage years, you know, they're in their later teens, they started to grasp it too. And then ultimately at the very end is when I wrote a thesis. And I wrote some other things, and it was explaining to the church hierarchy across the country how our unique function paralleled us to a cult. And that's the point where I exited stage left with my wife and my 3 kids and extracted them. And we left behind an entity that gripped our entire lives. It was a merry-go-round of dysfunction and activities, and we never really had any contact or function with people outside of our own circle. And so that was, it was our all, it was our everything. Our whole life was centered around it. And it, to me, it's very dysfunctional. So anyhow, after about 2 years of coming out of it, I started to question God. I became extremely angry because I reflected back in the amount of family losses I had, friendship losses, my experiences that went on from within. Yeah. And the reason I became extremely angry in my heart toward him was because I was looking at post or pre becoming a part of the cult church is... I believe that, again, he truly led me there. So if he led me there and then I had all those losses that were extremely painful, then I started to become angry internally at God. And it went on for about 5 years. And after about 28 years of sobriety, I started to drink again and I started to medicate those pains. And then ultimately I came to a place where I realized I needed to heal inside and address the issues. And I think the biggest healing point that I had was And I started attending what's called CR, called Celebrate Recovery. And it's basically, it's a worldwide institution, I guess you'd call it, or a group therapeutic functioning 12-step program that a lot of churches put on across the country and actually across the globe. But I started attending that. And the one thing that really just, I don't know if God put it in my head or what, but I just came to a place where I realized that God does not promise nice, neatly packaged lives to his people. And I, in my pride, thought that was owed to me by him. And when I was able to surrender that in my anger and stop drinking again.
Let's go back a little bit because I want to hear all about the recovery and kind of that process and more. And then we'll talk more about kind of what you've done after that or since then.
Okay.
Let's go back a little bit, though, because for everyone who's listening, most people already know my situation and the cult that I come from because, you know, I have the podcast and I talk about it all the time. So for everyone that, you know, is so curious about that, because everyone's always like, we want to hear more about your cult. Here's your opportunity, because Mike came from my cult. So we, our paths crossed, and I think, I don't know exactly my first memories of Mike, but they were on our property because Mike and his new wife lived in an apartment, home, like rental home, on some acreage that my family lived on. So that's kind of how I knew of Mike and his wife. And then they obviously went to our meetings, you know, because everyone knows we weren't allowed to call it church. It was meetings. So that's how I knew Mike. So he's a little bit older than me. I was a kiddo when, which I'm sure you guys were probably kiddos when you got married, too, because we all were. Yeah. That's just how we did things. But I have some fond memories of Mike and his wife. His wife is like precious. And we do come from the same cult, but with a lot of different views, because for most of you, you know, I was born into the cult, much like Mike's wife, and raised in it, married in it, and all those fun things. Mike's standpoint is a little bit different, which I would love to know a little bit more about, just because of our age difference. In ages, obviously give us different experiences, but also Mike joining on his own into something that a lot of us, you know, were born into. So I would love to hear a little bit more. Obviously, you spoke of that a little bit where you maybe had some addiction problems. You obviously had a lot of family dynamic stuff going on. Mm-hmm. And that brought you to the place where you had said you joined or started going to, I forget what church you said, another one.
Warehouse Ministries.
And then you met someone that brought you to our group. Was this when you were 17 or were you older when this happened?
Well, my first experiences of coming and being a part of the church cult was I was probably about 18 or 19 years of age.
Okay.
And it was one or two visits.
Okay.
So it wasn't really until 21 where I really came and started making myself a part of it.
Okay.
And functioning, you know, there on a regular basis. Yeah.
Okay. So... and then how long did you say you got married at 23?
Yeah, I was 23 years old. My wife was 19.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Oh,
we were mature then.
Well, of course you were. Of course you were.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're old enough to have babies, you better just get married and, you know, keep the process going.
But the miracle is, though, is we have been married for almost 33 years now.
That is awesome. That is amazing. And I like to tell people, because when people hear our story, they're always like, how are you guys still married? And a lot of people from our background and from our cult are not. And rightfully so, like most of us probably should have never got married in the first place. So I am not surprised by the amount of divorce amongst our group, just because a lot of marriages never should have happened in the first place. People are like, oh, you're just so amazing because you guys are still married and da da da. And I'm like, well, it's not just amazing, you know, like there has been so much work that has had to go into it because it's a different marriage now, you know? And I think people think, oh, you're so strong. And oh, it's like, no. It's been a lot of work of unlearning things that we thought were right and relearning things. And it's, I'm sure you could agree, it's a process. And it's been a hard one.
It's a journey.
It is a journey. So once you got in, I'm assuming you very soon we don't call it dating, obviously, but you decided you probably wanted to marry your wife, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
And is that what made you stay, or were there other things that really kind of drew you in, or was that the main reason?
No, that wasn't the main reason. Prior to becoming a part, I knew I wanted to marry a godly lady. And my wife was that. And I saw a lot of attributes about her, you know, as a young lady where she really cared for people and still does to this day. It's who she is. But the other, you know, aspect was, really, I liked what I saw. There were things that I call the sweet, the things that were the attracting points of the cult. And this is common for any religious institution, is there's things that draw people that make them want to be a part. So what I saw were families that seemingly were fairly well intact and multi-generational in their structure, you know, their grandparents, parents, their kids. So you'd have sometimes the dynamics would be three or four generations of people still functioning in the same religious institution, so to speak. But under the surface, you can't always see all the dysfunction that's there that is devastating or misguided in their spiritual understanding. So anyhow, what I saw were fairly intact families. I saw at times some what I thought was good theological preaching. I saw, you know, faithfulness. I saw camaraderie between, people and care for one another. Those things were attractive to me. What I did not see, what I did not understand until about 24 years in was we were elitists. We thought we were God's unique called out body, which is paramount of pride. We were totalistic. You better submit to the authorities that be, or they'll turn up the heat in a public setting or fashion, and they may go as far as pointing you out publicly if you don't comply to the cultural rules. It gives no latitude for making spiritual decisions based on your connection to God and the Holy Spirit for yourself. So what it did in essence is I think it created multi-generational structure of people that were whitewash walls. They subscribed to the checklist of the preacher rather than the checklist of what does God want me to do and how does he want me to live on their own connection with him. Anyhow, and then also we were isolationists. I didn't capture that until after 24 years. We had almost nothing to do with anybody, including my own blood family. You know, we'd see them maybe once every 2 or 3 years. You know, I'd fly back from Virginia and come back to the West Coast, back to my homeland. And I lost a lot of years of that. And that was part of my great pain and anger. Anyhow, those are the things that I saw that are attractive. And then ultimately the things that I saw that were destructive, that ultimately those three tenets, totalism, elitism, isolationism, that we bear the mark of a cult.
Okay, so you talked a little bit there about your family of origin. So you say you saw them every so often. When you were younger, what did they think about that of you joining or starting to go to this group? Or at that point, were they really not a part of your life?
Well, they were still some at that point.
Okay.
I think what they thought is, you know, it's just a phase. He'll come out of it. You know, he typically lives a short burn on whatever he tries.
How are things now with them since you have gotten out?
Well, after I came out, by that point, my father, at least the man who I grew up knowing was my father until 53 years old, or me turning 53 that I found out he wasn't my real father.
Wow.
So he was dead by the time I extracted myself and family. My mom, the primary reason to move back to California after I extracted us was to be a help to my mom, and she received me with arms of grace in spite of the pain that she received by my cultic decisions. And, you know, my extended family has kept their distance, and, you know, they remember me when I was young. I was a wild child, and I did time. You know, I was the family drunk and drug addict and drug dealer and all that. So, you know, I'm not very attractive in their eyes, and it's my fault, a lot of it. You know, I don't hold it against them. And then my sister, I had two sisters. One's deceased, and the one who's alive here in the Sacramento area, she's received me with arms of grace.
Mm.
And she's just a great, great person. And
that's
she's
awesome.
Extended love to my daughters.
Mm. And, oh, I love that.
And she's good as gold.
Oh, that's so awesome. And I bet that's so neat for her to, you know, though she probably missed out on or did miss out on so much of their growing up years.
Yeah.
How neat that she can be a part of their, even as adults, you know, and older, that she can be a part of their lives now. I think that's so neat that, you know, I think of my parents' family. I'm sure you know Chris and Warren. I felt that way about them welcoming, you know, my family back after all the years. Same thing. So much,
yeah.
You know, how we treated other people was terrible. And to see that grace of open arms, of family coming back. I have a picture of my cousin, Brett, and I. So he was my age, like the closest of us cousins in age. And yeah. We were really close when all of a sudden, you know, their family was marked. And so all of a sudden as a child, like, he's my best friend. What happened, you know? And so I remember being very confused. Of course, I prayed every night, like, please help their family to get right with you, Lord. Obviously, they're wrong. You know, I don't know what they're doing wrong, but they're wrong. And so just a lot of confusion as a child over that. And then I have this picture that I just love of us a couple years ago at Thanksgiving. Like, he had come into the house and someone took a picture and I like gave him this huge bear hug. And it's just like so cool that now we're raising our kids together, you know, and I do get emotional. Like every time I just like we're at the beach and everyone's like all of our kids are hanging out together. I'm just like, it makes me sad that we miss so much time together. But at the same time, I'm just like so grateful that we get to be friends now, you know, and there's had to be some apologies, and it's tough, and you know, we're all raised with it, and or when you're raised in it like that, you don't really have the choice. It's not like we did that, but just awful. It's so sad how damaged so many families, and unfortunately too, you have
thousands of families.
I always think it's interesting to talk to people who still do have belief. And I know you talked about that struggle. Why don't we talk a little bit more about that if you're open to that and just kind of how that looked for you and what ultimately like changed your mind or kind of got you going in this direction again.
So when I exited stage left from the cult with my family, we did have some connections that we were beginning to make with, some people in a Bible study, because my youngest daughter started going to a private school that was faith-based, and that's how we made the connection. So we had a launching ground or a place to land when we left, and we were a part of that church out east for about a year, and then we, you know, relocated back to California. So my anger didn't really begin until, you know, about a year after residing back in the California area. So when we came back here, we were a part of a church at that point too, that, you know, we felt fairly comfortable with. And so the anger did not stop me from participating and seeking the Lord day to day. I would pour out my heart because I felt like from a fire I went through from the age of 25 to 35, I had confidence that the Lord could hear all the crap that would come out of my mouth about how I felt about Him and about others. And I gained that confidence in that relationship. So even though I was absolutely vehemently pissed off at him, I still continued to seek him daily, to read the Bible daily, express how I
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Belt daily. And this went on for 5 years. I mean, I was the little kid that thrashed around on the floor in front of his mom and dad and, you know, was flipping his finger at him. And I giving the F word to him, yes, because I was so pissed off. But I'd be back in the Bible the next day, you know, reading and seeking him and crying out. And so it went on and on and on. And the drinking went on and on and on. It was a sick cycle. So I didn't leave functioning in my faith. And I understand that that is just from observation for many of the people that you and I were part of. When they exited stage left, they were done. They're so sick in their heart and pained and troubled, I believe, that they just don't want, and they don't, I don't, this is my opinion, maybe many of them, their hearts never were able to heal, or because nobody else was viable within the group to help them on the outside. And then maybe that mentality stayed with them, like going to seek therapy and or sharing your story with somebody so that somebody, please hear my story. Somebody, please understand me. And that's a difficult thing to do, because I sure in the heck didn't want to tell anybody that I was a part of a cult, because in the American mind, we think of groups like Jim Jones and David Koresh. That's how we equate to a cult. So anyhow, I still have a strong filter. Like, I don't trust most ministers. Even if I sit underneath them, I don't trust them.
Right.
Because a lot of them are showboats.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it is. I know we've done the church hopping thing, and say it took us a while to even like go to church, because for everyone that's listening, churches were very bad. We were right. All churches were bad. We didn't call ourselves a church because we couldn't take a name. And because what was even the reasoning behind the not being able to have a name?
Church was the body of people.
Yes.
Right. So it was wrong to presume that we could call a church a building as a church.
Yes, right. Remember the little song? That's burned in there. So it took us a long time to even, and I feel like Dwayne was even more resistant than I was. I was kind of just like, church, let's go to church. We can do whatever we want. And I had started working at a church preschool, though, because Dakota was preschool age a couple years after we got out. And so that's what kind of got us starting to go to churches. But we hopped around quite a bit. And I had just the hardest time listening to anything. It was just such a turnoff. Yeah. It was so triggering. And again, I don't think we had done no healing at that point either. We just were floundering out there in the world like, oh, we have to make our own decisions. Yeah. What do we do on Friday nights? You know? And so it was very hard. You know, to like all of a sudden you know, you might be 30, but you literally have never made a choice in your life. So it was very triggering and hard to get to a place where like now we feel comfortable at where we're at and I really enjoy it. But I still like, you know, I might hear something and I have to remind myself, you do not have to agree with every word you hear.
Right.
You know, like, and so it's more of a, and I think it's, it's more of a self-recovery thing. It's the therapy and the books and whatever people need to do to to heal. But it's more that than finding the right church or because you're never going to agree with everything, you know? And I think we were raised like you have to agree with this and this is what you do. And if you don't agree, there's going to be problems. So I think, you know, it's for those that, and I see so many from our groups too, that also will hop right into a church situation or a church group, and yet they still haven't done the healing. And it might look okay from the outside, and I think probably they're in a better boat than they were before, but there's still that abuse on the inside that doesn't get healed. And that's where I like having these conversations where people aren't afraid to get help, you know, and it might be different kind of help. That's where I like sharing these stories, you know, and I think it is valuable for other people to understand like, oh, well, Mike said he did therapy and he's a pretty cool guy. So, and I just think it's, you know, whatever it takes for someone to get the help that they need, I think it's so important and valuable because it's hard to just jump out of something like that. And you really don't know what to do. Like it was we had a lot of rough years after that. And really it's only been the last couple years where we've actually like done real healing and real work on, you know, realizing as I struggle with mental health situations, realizing that catches up with you. If you just ignore it and put it under the rug, like we were taught to do, it catches up with you eventually. And, so it's not fun, but it's a lot of work. And I think I talk about this all the time, but I think people, they don't want to put the work into recovery because it's a lot of work and it's messy and it's painful, but it's worth it. And so I just like, that's why I love what you're doing because it's another person getting some words out there that might affect someone in the right way. And why don't we talk about that a little bit and what you're doing with your book?
Probably about 5 years ago, I was spurred by my daughters to write a book. And I do have a son, too, by the way, but he didn't spur me. He's more of a neutral character, but he's a good guy. And then I had some friends spur me along the way. And then lo and behold, about 2 years after that, on a Thanksgiving day, I had a gentleman who was the father of both of my daughter's friends. And they all came over for Thanksgiving, and he was the liaison for book writers in the Christian realm to Christian book publishers like Zondervan and other names. Zondervan's the biggest one out there. But since the advent of KDP, Kindle Direct Publishing, which is Amazon, his job kind of took a sideline, so to speak, and being the intermediary to publishers and book writers and publishers. So anyhow, he was kind of a stepping stone to get information and some help to me. And then ultimately the time came, I'll just be straight up. My wife was a little resistant to the idea of writing a book because it creates a lot of exposure. Mm-hmm. And and also resistant to me doing YouTube. Again, it creates exposure. And she's since changed her view. And I kind of held off on the book because I didn't want to create tension between us. Mm-hmm. And I wanted her to be on board. And she goes, you know, I saw in the Sierra College directory that there's a lady who's going to put on a seminar online. This is during COVID, I think, or at the end of it. In regards to writing a book. So, you know, I figured, well, maybe this is God telling me it's time to write because I did express to him, I said, I feel like it's on my heart from you to write it. And maybe that was the answer. So within a week after watching the lady's seminar, which really wasn't that great, and you were on it too,
That's how we reconnected. I didn't even know if I knew you lived back here at that point yet, but you know, it was crazy.
It's like, I had my screen blacked out and you had yours on. So I was like, that's Shannon Bowen. That's the little girl who lived down the street and was in the same cult as me.
Yes.
So anyhow, crazy. And then Shannon, you text me or you wrote me through the,
oh yeah. Yeah.
The portal. And I said, well, it's me. It's Mike Boyd. And then you're like, OMG, it is him. So anyhow, that's how we got here today.
Yeah, it is. It really is.
So about a week after that, I started to write and it flowed out of me. Mm. And I prayed to the Lord. Every time I wrote a chapter, I had no end game in the book. But my end game in my heart was I want to help people because it's a painful, painful thing to work through. So I wrote, I think it's a 13 chapter book. It's a short read. It's about 130 pages. And what I talk about is some of my experience. I talk about some commonalities in cult. I talk about some of the confusion in the American mind about cult. I talk about what draws people in. I talk about a lot of my own story because I believe everybody has a story to tell. Everybody. Everybody matters. Everybody counts. And then ultimately I come to the last chapter. And the last chapter is where I provide the hope and healing. And it sounds so simple, but I believe it is in applying the 12 steps that are part of AA, NA, and that we use at Celebrate Recovery. And I rewrite them in a way where they're palatable for people who have experienced cultic or spiritual abuse. So they're more digestible. And in the book, I don't use a whole lot of scripture. I'm not trying to correct people theologically. I'm trying to help them resonate in their heart with my heart or other people's hearts and bring them to a place where they can hopefully open up and express their experience, because I think that's where healing begins, is telling your story and finding the right trusted individual. It can be difficult, and you're going to find people who are cross-eyed when you share your story. I have some of those people in my life, and I have some people who genuinely just listened and still accepted me, still loved and cared about me. And those are the people that you need to pray to God to help you find. Yeah. And that's where it starts. And I believe in therapy too. I've done some of that with my wife, with a therapist. And then my two daughters have used exit counselors specifically for their traumatic experience.
How old were your girls all your kids when you left?
So my oldest was, I think, probably 21.
Okay. Okay. Wow.
And my youngest was 15. Yeah, she was probably 14. She was 14, and my oldest was probably 19 at that point.
Gosh. Wow.
Yeah.
Was your oldest?
My son was in between.
In between, okay.
Yeah, he was probably 18.
And none of them were married yet?
Thank
when
God.
You left?
No.
Oh,
two of them are married. Two of them are married today. That would have made it even more complicated, right?
That's so good. Yes. Well, and that's why I've talked to so many. They had kids that were barely married too during this, exodus that we did. And it's so sad. Like, one of them wants to be on the podcast, but she's like, I just can't talk about it publicly yet because it'll cause problems with the little that she's able to see her daughter. It will probably take care of that completely. So I'm glad yours weren't married. But it is sad. And there again, that's where it's still dividing families. It's still damaging families. I know my husband's family has a lot that are still in, and it's disgusting the damage that it's still causing between families today. Yanya Lalich, she is an expert, a cult expert, and she talks about moral injury where, we were involved in this cult and we may have caused harm to other people as well because of the leadership we're following. And I think I love when she talks about it because people forget about that aspect of, like, I was just talking to someone last week, I think, on a live stream about that. Like, I remember my sister and her husband had left our cult for a while before the big, mass exodus. And I remember being so judgmental and so mean to her, all these choices she was making, and just so, so unpleasant to her. And And yet that was what I was trained to do, you know? And so, yes, I have apologized to her for being such a jerk, you know? And yet, I was doing what I truly at the time thought was right. I thought it was helpful to her for me to be mean to her. So but it's another part of that recovery process that I think gets overlooked sometimes, where we kind of have to relieve ourselves of some of that and acknowledge it, and then, you know, kind of process it, because I think that gets forgotten sometimes. But it's true. It's like you're trained to do these terrible things.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. I have had to go back and apologize to some people within the cult and people without, from without. And part of the 12 steps in the book, that is in there.
How has recovery, you know, processing all this? I know it's a forever journey. It's never over. But how are things going now?
Well, I would say it's a journey. And I said that earlier. And there's going to be things that, you know, are spurred in my mind and that I have to reflect back on and look at and consider for my own mental health. And for my wife, you know, I would say, again, it's been a journey, and she's very open to looking into the mirror of her life and, you know, asking God for help and looking for guidance. And I would say, you know, with my kids, I like to say they're all believers, and, you know, they have their struggles too. And I think it had a tremendous impact on them. And, you know, we love our kids, and they're good apples, and they're the ones who willingly sought help on their own. It wasn't because we sent them to a exit counselor. It was their own choice. So we all have varying degrees of ups and downs, but we're still connected and getting ready to celebrate Thanksgiving with our clan down in Arizona here. Looking forward to that.
Oh, yay. Yeah. Good. So we're not, that's very exciting.
Yeah, we're disjointed by real estate and distance, but not in our heart.
Yeah. What would you say to someone, because there's a lot, I feel like, in your age group, and like you to my parents' age group maybe, that are still involved in the cult. If you could say anything to one of them, if they were listening, what would you say with your experience of being in it and being out now?
I have some ideas.
Besides read your book.
I got lots of ideas. I don't think everybody really deserves a textbook response that you pull off the shelf. I think everybody's a little different maybe in their experience and the impact it had. But I think if God is not in the picture in your life, then that would be the starting ground. Give him another chance. And and I think he could open some doors to your heart that maybe you don't see, and help heal those. And it does take time, and he doesn't download everything on you at once. I think getting out of the isolation, if that's a part of your life, is a key component. It's rubbing shoulders with other people, having different entities of people that you can, not just one, but multiple, where you can talk about your life, and it doesn't always have to be the cult stuff. That one, you want to be a little more selective, but it's easy to isolate. It's easy to hide and stuff the pain, and it never worked for me, and I don't believe it works for anybody. I think it needs to be shared. That's a therapist, applying the 12 steps and the book called Cold Candy, and went praying to God for, can you bring the right people into my life that can hear my dark sorrow and my losses, and he'll come through.
It's so valuable to share our stories. And I know everyone shares in different ways. Everyone's comfortable in, you know, whether it's speaking or writing or whatever, but there are so many resources now for this type of thing. Like, I have a friend that does a program called Writing to Reckon, and everything's virtual now. So you can sit in your little, you know, jammies if you want to, and do the, you know, if it's a writing thing, or if it's a speaking thing, or if it's kind of like a support group type thing, there's so many things virtually that are available. There's podcasts. Like, that was one of the things that very first kind of brought me out to realizing, I was invited on a lot, but listening to, I love cult podcasts now, but listening to really, you know, all the whole spectrum of cults. I watch a lot of documentaries too. That's my jam, but I'm like obsessed. I have a spreadsheet.
There's some good ones out there.
Again, there's resources out there. There's so much out there for people that have come from these kind of environments and communities. And, oh, I know where I was going with that. I still feel that community is so valuable and important for me personally. I know that having friends I can trust that I can talk to about this crazy stuff, also having friends from my cult that we can laugh about and make fun of and, you know, throw some humor into it is also really important for me because I definitely heal through humor a lot. And it's pretty fun now to like have people that we grew up with, that we were kind of split apart with for quite a while, over in our backyard having a beer and laughing our asses off at some of the stuff that we endured and went through. And we're just like, how? Like, what?
Exactly.
So I love having community from both sides because it's pretty, there's a lot of humor when you're on the other side. Probably not so much when it was
I agree.
It's good to have community.
Yeah, we experienced a lot of the same stuff, sharing the different anomalies of our function that were just odd. And it's just like, we would just have to laugh at it. It's like, how in the world did we get there?
Is there anything else that you would like to share before we end our call here?
Well, I can always think of more to talk about, but I appreciate the opportunity. if you were to look across the landscape of history and look at the landscape of geography across the globe, there are millions and millions of people that have been burned spiritually by physical abuse, sexual abuse, and emotional abuse. And the crimes that have been committed against these people, don't think they got away with it. Someday they're going to stand before a creator and he's going to address what happened. And we don't always get the opportunity to see the justice that needed to be executed, at least we thought, in our own presence. It does not work that way most of the time. Me and my own personal experience, I saw justice executed a couple times, and it was hard not to gloat. But he'll deal with it. There is an awesome creator who's going to deal with it.
I've run into a couple of the leaders since being gone and never having like big conversations, but one of them in particular, the sadness, because I just went up and gave him a big hug. The sadness that I saw and felt from him, like in his eyes, I'm just like, he has to know how wrong. And yet he's still continuing, you know, with the same mindset and group. But it made me really sad. And I'm kind of glad it happened because I'd always thought before, if I run into them, I'm going to, I have all the words, you know, that I, and I don't know what made me in that moment just hug them and keep on walking. But I appreciate you being on here. This was a really good conversation. Thank you all for joining me for another episode of the Shanty Pants Show. I really appreciate you guys hanging out with me every week. You can find all of my links to all my social medias, anything your heart desires, at shantypantsshow.com. You can even find my amazing merch is back up and running there. And you can email me from there, all the things, all the things. Also, you always ask, how can you help me out with this whole podcast situation? You can subscribe to my podcast, you can leave reviews, you can share it with friends. I appreciate it all. So I am super excited to bring you guys the rest of the season. It's going to be amazing. And I'll see you next week.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style. Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.